not going to be like when they lost to Western Michigan with Kenny.
No, I understand. What's the line right now? Six?
It's six.
I think that's too much.
They're legitimately playing
a good team.
One of the best. Well, I don't know if they're a good offense because they have one of the best quarterbacks in the country.
That team beat UNLV, who was ranked. They beat a ranked Georgia Tech team when they played them.
Yes.
I mean,
not that either one of those teams are going to compete
that.
For
I understand
any
that,
kind
like,
of national championship.
They're a legitimate opponent. Like, it wouldn't be like if this was a 1-5 Syracuse team and I would just be blind with rage. They are good, and McCord could absolutely light up this defense. I just don't want you to have this one.
Well, it's
tomorrow.
It's a win-win for me.
I don't. I can't.
It's a win-win. If Pitt wins, then I've got
good
them
for
at
you
7-0.
And, yep. And if Syracuse wins,
then they've got a relevant football team again.
Our friend Fred right here, you'll be smirking at him and saying stuff that makes him want to strangle
Zero
you.
Zero gloating. I'll do absolutely no gloating.
Give me a break.
On the Cooper Kupp thing, so we heard Arthur Smith talk about Russell Wilson and how he looked in his first game, mm-hmm. and more high praise for him.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Russell Wilson wants Cooper Kupp because of what his personal quarterback coach put out there.
Yes.
I think Russell Wilson obviously has Mike Tomlin's respect. The offense looked different pre-snap with Wilson. They were trusting him to take Coors Light and change plays and things of that nature. So Mike was the first coach ever to bench a quarterback who was 4-2 and healthy in NFL history. So that's how much we know he likes Russell Wilson.
Yep.
That being said, I don't think he should like him enough where he would take Russell Wilson's opinion on a player and then allow for that to
That would be unheard of. A guy has played one game, albeit a promising one for you, and now he's shot calling.
Well, hold on a second. Not unheard of in the NFL. Look at what Aaron Rodgers has done for the Jets.
And how's that worked for the
Jets? Right. I mean, and I think Tom Brady did that when he went to Tampa Bay, too.
I should say unheard of for the Steelers to have somebody be deferred to by the head coach that much after this small amount of time.
We're seeing teams with veteran quarterbacks in the NFL that have changed teams where they affect a lot of what happens, their opinion. It's almost like they have more power within the organization than coaches and GMs have. And so what I'm saying is Russell Wilson can be the biggest fan in the world of Cooper Kupp, but it was one outstanding debut, but it's not enough for me to say, okay, Russ, I trust you so much now. If this is who you want, I will go out and give up a big pick for him because you think you can play even better with him. I'm not doing that, Chris.
No, not. I'm definitely not allowing myself to be influenced to that degree.
Brooke Pryor says we don't even have to worry about that. She said in ESPN today, talking about teams and their trade deadline plans, quote, don't expect the typically stingy Steelers to land a high-priced veteran. And that's because they have extensions for T.J. Watt and a quarterback contract on the horizon after the season.
Well, that would just mean, I mean, that goes back to actually the quarterback part of that backing Jerry then. Jerry has said all along that their intent was to extend Russell Wilson.
So well, she didn't name Russell Wilson. But
don't you read into that, though, if they're going to extend a quarterback if they like Wilson?
They have to earmark money for a quarterback because I don't think they're going to draft one next year and make that guy their starter. Are they typically stingy? I mean, they spend pretty close to the cap. They've given out big contracts. I like Brooke a lot, and she's a great writer. I don't think that that's the right word here.
Does she mean maybe on draft capital? Because they've only moved a second or first-round pick twice in their history, basically.
Don't expect the typically stingy Steelers to land a high-priced veteran. So they're stingy with draft picks.
But then she does write about finances and not picks there. So like, I'm guessing that that could be part of what she means, but if it's more about draft picks, then you might have needed a notation in there that, hey, they don't want to part with valuable draft capital.
And you can't say about them anymore, and this used to be one of the, Mr. Rooney, Dan Rooney would say, I'd rather get rid of a guy a year early than keep him around a year late, that kind of thing.
Yep.
That's why they got rid of Rod Woodson, and he, you know, lamented it till the day he died, R.I.P. They're paying Cam Hayward big money. Like, they are an older team. The quarterback's 35 years old. I don't think in this situation, I don't think Cooper Kupp's age is as much of a concern as his injury history.
I would normally say that, yeah, they're paying Cam because they know Cam so well, but they also have a 35-year-old quarterback who's played one game with the franchise. and barely practiced. Yeah, I would say the injury history, though, is something they are more cognizant of. I do. And they should be. Like, yes, he is a very, very good player, but I just want to keep banging home the number to people. Out of 41 possible games that the Rams could have played, or maybe it's 40, I don't even know, he's only played 23 of them, man. That's barely 50%. You can do the math. It's like, you know, it's 59% of the games or something like that. It's just not
near
enough.
And I get if any Steelers fan says, well, it's not like Mike Williams has been a clean bill of health guy either.
They're asking for a sixth or a seventh probably for that guy. This is a second, and you've got some salary you're bringing on.
Yeah.
Like, he is a premium player who is paid like one.
Sports Illustrated wrote, according to a team source, the Steelers are interested in Cup, and that they are willing to give up more for him than the other receivers they've been interested in.
I don't.
So that means more than Adams and more than Ayuk.
I believe
Sports Illustrated. I don't know what who is covering.
Is that Strackbine?
Maybe Albert Breer.
Is it national SI or is it the local little SI?
It says SI.com/NFL/Steelers/news/source Steelers Pittsburgh interested Rams Cooper Kupp. So
you don't. So hold
there's
on.
There's no author on the article. Look, there isn't. I don't know what to tell you.
To me, that's like a Noah Strackbine thing.
Donnie, what do you think? Strackbine or Breer?
I mean, how am I supposed to guess?
Well,
Breer's got to be putting his name on this, if it's his.
I don't know. I see Sports Illustrated
in the
Steelers
SI
article.
I was like mostly out of the question. I thought like last year they said SI was going to be mostly AI written.
Yeah, I thought the same. So maybe this is artificial intelligence?
No, I don't think it's that. But like I thought, like big Sports Illustrated that everyone grew up with is like out of the equation, and now it's just mostly.
This is unbelievable by him,
like
Donnie. Hold on, this is more pony playing dumb.
No, it's not.
It took me 15 seconds to find out. Read again the first paragraph you've printed.
According
there.
To a team source, the Steelers are interested in acquiring Cup from the Los Angeles Rams
and view the 31-year-old as their best option.
That's
this
the article
year.
I've got.
SportsIllustrated.com. In this story, Pittsburgh Steelers, by Noah Strackbine. That's
no,
Noah.
But see, this is why I got confused. It isn't usually up there. It's more down here. See?
Sometimes, you know, I spent 5 years having my brain turned to tapioca working with Starkey.
Okay.
And sometimes I think this is actually worse for me.
Why?
You're pointing to my monitor going, well, usually the byline
is
down here, but this time it was up there. Oh, interesting.
So if you want this guy and you don't want the Steelers to give up the kitchen sink for him,
mm-hmm.
Let me make sure I have this right. Root for the Rams to lose and root for Cooper Kupp to do very little tonight.
Yeah, to look bad, I guess, if that's what.
So Rams lose, Kupp look bad.
Yeah.
Donnie, does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I mean, because like we were saying yesterday, and I think it's still holds true going into the week, the NFC West being so wide open, you want the Rams to continue losing, because if they would win tonight and then, I don't know, win next week, if I'm...
They're not going to move anybody.
Yeah,
they might start feeling like they can win.
I'm thinking, hey, we can win this division. We feel good about our quarterback. Our receivers are coming back. Nacua's coming back in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, I mean, you absolutely want them to lose.
But the part about him looking bad, if Stephon Gilmore, for example, put the screws to Kupp and he only had one catch, I'm sorry, that would affect like my interest in him. It just would. You know, like if he just...
Would it affect your interest? Here's the calculation I think you'd have to be making.
When it comes to the high draft pick, it absolutely would.
Okay, but here's the calculation. If that suddenly lowered the asking price, would that be like juice is worth the squeeze?
If it actually lowered the asking price, yes.
Yeah, if
it
lowered the asking price like a full round, you'd say like, well, that was just one bad game that he had.
Yeah.
So, if you want the asking price to go down, you have to just like roll the dice that he has a bad game, they lose, and that they don't get like kind of the offers, but
because
I would put it out there again that I think it's more likely that they might actually get a second, because I think there's more than one interested party here. I know the Steelers are the betting favorite, but if there's more than one team that could plausibly acquire the player, which there is, then the price naturally has a chance to go up.
But I don't think he'll be available if they win tonight for at least another week. If L.A. wins and the Bills go to Seattle and win and they're favored, they're a half game out of a playoff
The division. And a playoff spot by extension.
Half game.
Oh, I know.
They can't trade him then.
I know. That division's a complete mess. It really is.
We usually have our next guest at this time on the Fan Hotline, provided he's not on the golf course. He's presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. He'll be hosting a Pitt Football Preview in an hour and 15 minutes with Doran Dickerson. Bob Pompiani, who was showing me a dress shirt with a wine bottle on it earlier.
Yeah. They have some great clothes down at Heinz Healy's, where I go to shop for when we do different things. And one of
this
them
is the second week in a row you've given them a pop. You also said last week you wanted to outfit Donnie with apparel.
I did. They had one with a bottle of Cabernet being spilled into a glass. It's just, number one, for me, it was good because I spill stuff all over myself. So if I did it, you would never know because it's part of the pattern of the shirt. There's wine spilled. And so people on social media are putting out there. So now people are making their own wine shirts, and the Pitt Panther mascot has one on tonight. I just got a picture
for the game.
Well, I don't know about for the game, but for now.
Pomp, I'm amazed by two things. One, as a bald guy, I don't have to think about this, and I just realized you are wearing your headphones in a way I've never seen somebody wear them. But it's because you've got hair to worry about. You've got like well coiffed hair, so that's one thing.
It is coiffed.
Yeah, very much coiffed. Two,
there is a nice coif to it, would you?
Well, I use a lot of product, unlike Rich. He just wakes up, it's the same.
Rich just gets into a wind tunnel every day. no, and then I was saying this to Pony while you were talking to the masses. Said, Andrew, doesn't it kind of put it in perspective? We're just nobodies compared to you. You walked in the building, and it was like Sinatra walking in. And we're the two guys, the opening act, and there are people who did not acknowledge our existence who were just like, bomb.
It's a product of being around for a long
time. You're the Rolling Stones and we're the
Bomb. You guys are the hot new property, man. You're the hot new property.
Cooper Kupp, do you think they'd give up a second-round pick for him?
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot. Number one, there's a side of me that says because they are where they are, I would do it, given the fact that they have people who...
Okay, that's you. How about them?
Well, wait, but I'm not done. There's two sides of it. That would be number one. They have an opportunity here, and I think in the AFC minus a couple of teams, they could be right there. So that would intrigue me based on his health. That's another concern. And the other thing is, okay, second-round picks. They have been valuable. You know, Zach Frazier is a second-round pick. There have been some good ones that have come along. Do they think it's prudent to trade one of them who could become a starter immediately like Frazier has done in others?
And they don't like the trade for second-round picks.
There have been some busts there, too. You know, Lyman Sweet has a list of those kinds of things. So it's just a matter of what they think they are. And if they think they're competitive enough to do it, then...
Okay, so how would you answer it, then?
My answer is no.
Does Cooper...
My answer is no, and the reason is because I think he's just not reliable enough for me. He's a tremendous player, but he had one really good year. The rest of them, before and after, have been okay, but not great. And I don't know what the real Cooper Kupp is. Will the real Cooper Kupp please stand up?
Well,
please
stand
up.
I didn't think we'd get an Eminem reference. I was just going to drop into the line with him is you say unreliable health-wise. It's you can't make the club in the tub, bub, like an old Ron Cookism about this. You can't be worth a second-round pick if I look at your last 2.5 seasons and see you've played barely 50% of the games. And, like, I've seen people say, well, some of these are freak injuries. It's not like he's tweaking a hamstring. He's getting his ankle rolled up on. That makes it worse for me because that tells me he's playing a style, he's fighting for yardage, just the way he runs out there seems to, like, lend itself to him getting in these compromising positions where he could be hurt. And so I just can't do it. I also, and this will piss everyone off, which is my specialty. Mm. Even a healthy Cooper Kupp would not compel me in a one-game do-or-die playoff game to pick them over Kansas City.
Yeah, but it
gives
them a
shot. Buffalo.
It gives you a shot, and it gives you some attention taken away from George Pickens. One thing I'll say about him this year, in the two games he did play, he was heavily targeted, and he came up with pretty good numbers.
Yeah, 21 targets in game one.
Right.
Stafford loves him, and I think Wilson would love him.
I think Wilson would love him, too.
Is Wilson as good as Stafford would be at getting him the ball? Is this offensive scheme as good as the McVay scheme is
probably
at getting him the ball?
Well, here's the thing. For a slot guy or someone who does those kind of routes, in that first game, Wilson and 78% of his throws were 10 yards or less. So if you get it in the hands quickly and put it on the money, I think he can be somebody.
All right, Bob,
here's
the question about their game tonight. Obviously, we need the Rams to lose because if they win, they're going to feel like they're still in it.
So yes.
He would go off the, I think.
It's ironic, isn't it,
block.
They're playing Minnesota? Because Minnesota's been mentioned as one of those teams.
And then the other, thing Chris and I debated was, if you're a Steelers fan, do you want to see him play well tonight? Because if he doesn't, you could say, well, we can get him for less. But if he does, he might still cost a second-round pick. You'd also, though, have the peace of mind that he came back from the injury and looked good.
Right. I mean, that's a tough question to answer because it depends on where you're sitting. And I'm sure they...
Well, you're sitting right next to me right now with a nice coffee and, again, the nicely coiffed hair. So how would you answer it?
My question, again, I wouldn't do it just because I think it's too much money down the road. I think they feel like they can draft people who can come in and look at their recent draft success, guys who've stepped right into play. And their Porter's a second-round pick, technically, even though he's the end of the first or beginning of the second.
Well, then how about the Mike Williams idea?
I'm not sold on him. I think there are others. I heard you say last night on our showdown or on a sports call show about Slayton.
Oh, you've taken that to the sports call.
I mean,
as well,
it's an interesting name for me, Bob.
I'm getting mocked left and right for the Darius Slayton thing, and all I'm doing is providing a reasonable answer to their problems at a price that I think everyone would be okay with because he's going to be a fifth or sixth round pick in cost.
Right. For a fifth round pick, Hopkins would have intrigued me more so just because it's a fifth, but. You know, I don't know. It depends on where they sit. If they believe they are that team that can do some damage here, then I would do it, knowing that you're so what? You got to give up some assets once in a while if you're going to do this and play this game. They're not normally doing it, but they did trade a number one pick to get
Minka. It's just funny that they would be making that determination and doing that calculus about we're in it to win it and we have a chance because of their optimism about a quarterback who's still getting paid gobs of money not to play for somebody else. Do you know, like, the optics of that are very strange.
Both guys were sort of cast on. Nobody wanted
him. In Wilson's case, they are paying a ton of money in Denver for him to not be there, and it would be wild to have another team say, oh, because we have this guy you literally treated like you're trash, we went dumpster diving for you, and we now think we can win big with this guy in the postseason. That just is an interesting optics kind of thing for me.
I think the Wilson thing, it's one game. I want to see a lot more. I liked what I saw the other night. The beginning was slow, but obviously he got on. He hadn't played in 11 months. I want to see more of him, and I want to see what they can do and what the realistic goal for this offensive pass situation would be.
Was Pitt a big deal in Pittsburgh in the mid to late 70s and early 80s, or were they still an afterthought even when they were ranked number one in winning national championships?
They were a bigger deal than they are right now, and mostly because of what you just said. And they had terrific talents. Tony Dorsett, who was from my alma mater, and I watched him go all the way to where he went. It's unbelievable what he meant and how good he was.
Did they break through that Pirates-Steelers wall, though?
I'm glad you mentioned Pirates because the Pirates at the
still
time.
Still in their heyday.
It was, and it was those two teams. It was the Pirates and the Steelers, and I think in a pro town you're always going to have that problem if you're a college team.
So what do they have to do to cut through then? This year.
Define cut through. What does that mean?
To become like something where he and I.
Well, we're on the sports call and you want to talk about them right off the bat.
Like,
Bob.
What would it take for them to be leading the sports call?
If they win tonight,
okay,
and if they talk, I'd carry it into tomorrow. If they're 7-0 and they have an SMU team, which is. Are they next? I think they're next.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. So they have a chance to do something they haven't done in a while. I think it catches fire. Can it ever supplant what's going on with the Steelers? No. Especially if the Steelers are 5-2 looking at 6-2. No. But I do think people start to jump aboard the bandwagon. I do. I think you'll start seeing bigger crowds. And, the Clemson game could be terrific in terms of atmosphere and everything else.
They also fight a unique battle differently. Our buddy Hoagie Pony tweeted this early in the show, and I think Pomp might have an interesting opinion
on it. Happily married, by the way. Congratulations
on
your nuptials, Hoagie.
Because Lennox has bacterial pneumonia, I could not attend that wedding, but I'm going to figure out a way to send our guy Hoagie something nice. Yeah, I know. Neither here nor there, but yeah. He mentioned that Pitt basketball caught fire, like in the late Howland and then Jamie's years. Like that was a hot ticket, and they were a big deal. Here's the thing:
Penguins were terrible.
Here's the thing. Well, no, the 08-09 Pitt teams even like were still very popular.
I got you.
But they
gained
steam.
They gained steam, and they still kept their steam going when the Penguins started to get good. But my point there is one: a lot easier to pack a place that holds 11-5 or whatever it is, and to have that raucous environment. And two, and this is probably the bigger thing. I know we get the reputation not a basketball town. People like it, and it was a novelty. Hey, it's the closest thing you'll see to the NBA in this town. It's high-level college basketball.
The Big East.
You know inherently, and I'm not saying this to slag Pitt. This is college football in general. You know you're watching the lesser product, right? Like the less talented version of the thing you love the next day, the NFL. You know that these guys, most of them, aren't going to play pro ball. And so I think that makes it tougher to some degree to get into.
I agree with that, but I also think there is, the excitement that comes from a team that's actually knocking on the door rating-wise and moving up. I know they're, what are they, 19th?
19th, yeah.
19th this week, but they can go and
if put they win, they'll be like 16th. And if they beat SMU, they'll be very close to
and
the top 10.
And then Clemson could be in a game that would be – and
if
I,
they're
I,
undefeated going into that Clemson game –
Clemson to be undefeated going into
well,
that
no, Clemson got – didn't Clemson get
Clemson
hammered by Georgia?
Georgia?
Yeah, they
oh,
got
I'm
cracked.
Talking about in the conference.
In the conference, yeah. If they're undefeated going into Clemson at 9-0 and Clemson is still a one-loss team – it'll be a battle of probably like 8th-ranked Pitt and probably 4th-ranked
It'll be one
Clemson.
Of the great weekends in
well, let's just hope it's
here,
not a noon start on – well, they don't have Fox anyway. But my point, I hate those noon starts. They got that Ohio – is
Penn
it
State.
Ohio – yeah, I mean, come on.
Pitt-Clemson would be a primetime game, I
think.
I think
Pitt-Clemson might get game day.
What do you prefer?
Happens.
I prefer night games on big stages like that, not noon starts.
3:30, I think, is the absolute perfect spot to
I
put those games.
Chris. Yeah, but if you had a choice –
Noon, 7:30. Yeah, because then I can watch most of the game with the kids in bed, and I'm like,
yeah,
I can just sit
I
there
got
and
stuff
watch.
My
it.
Wife wants me to do at noon on Saturday.
You can't say like, honey, I can't rake the leaves. It's dark out. Like you can
yes,
use
you
that
can.
As an
I've
excuse.
I've done that as an excuse. I told when Lisa and I got married, I had the bar very low. I said I don't do anything but talk. And if you're okay with that, sign on the dotted line because I don't and I haven't. And I'm ashamed of that in some regard. I pick weeds.
So
about
your
all I
so
do.
your strategy in marriage in that sense for like the honey-do list was strategic uselessness.
Right, and but it's a true replication
did
of what
you ever
I am.
Pull, did you ever pull the stunt where she asked you to fold, like, the laundry and you did such a bad job she never asked again?
No question. I've done that. I've painted badly. I've done a lot of things, and she's now real good at it.
So do you think Pitt will beat Syracuse?
She's the greatest, though. She takes care of all that, so I don't have to worry about it.
Do you think Pitt wins tonight?
I think Pitt wins in a close game tonight, yes. And I think they're going to go to SMU, and I think they're going to win there, too.
Classic ACC
matchup there,
Pitt
and SMU.
And
then I worry about the next game after that because I think there is some possibility that one of those is it
Virginia's Virginia. Next. Virginia's
okay.
After that.
Before Clemson, right?
Yeah.
So that's a game
that's
that could
be
trouble.
That's the classic Pitt game.
Yeah, and that's one that you have to watch. Just like I would think the Giants, even though it looks like on Monday night they have no chance.
They're hideous.
But
you're right,
Daniel
you're
Jones
right.
has been really good on the road
and,
this year.
And Bob makes a good point. Why is the line for Steelers-Giants the same as this game tonight? Think about that for a second.
Well, I've seen that, and that makes me wonder, too. And I, you know,
they get it wrong once in a while in the NFL,
well,
but
they got
not
it wrong
often.
With Steelers-Jets.
Not often, though. Like,
no, I'm saying the Steelers should win, but I would not be surprised if that's a better game than people think, or at least closer game.
All right, Bob, where are you down here for the 4:30 show?
It's over there on Art Rooney Avenue, where we always are. So Doran and I, we don't have the...
Has Doran picked Pitt to win every game this year so far?
You guys have access to a bar
well, of course
and food.
He has.
We don't. yes, I think so.
Has he... Wait.
Have you picked Pitt in every game?
No, I picked against them in the Cincinnati game.
Looked like a pretty good prediction for a long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, and then I think that was it. I think
how about
that's
West
all.
Virginia?
I had Pitt winning in a close game. I didn't see it the way it happened, though. That was kind of weird. They were down big. I mean,
who was the better quarterback in this game?
Well, see, McCord's older, and I think I've seen enough of him to make me think that. But that's not to say that Eli Holstein is
right.
not in that same, you know, road.
I'm trying to think of who it reminds me of. McCord is better, but, like, if you gave me one guy who I think games on the line is going to take his team down the field, it's Holstein. He's got, like, a
well,
weird –
look at those big plays he's
that's
made.
What I mean. He's got – I'm trying to think of an NFL comp here. It would be like Brady – not Brady going against Eli Manning in a Super Bowl, but kind of that basic vibe of – this guy isn't quite as good as the other guy, but
he's capable trust him. Of making
but
a play.
He's just like weirdly nails when it matters.
Yeah.
Bob, thank you for coming down.
Real quick question for you, because
sure.
we had this discussion last night. Boston won their first game, the defending champion Celtics. Chris, and I agree with this, too many three-pointers.
Oh,
they
my
made
God,
29
yes.
of them.
I said aesthetically it's awful.
And
it is
so
brutal.
It's going away
it's
from the way the game was supposed to be. And I love the three-point line, but not to the point
they
where they need to fire 60 of them.
They need
up.
A wider court, a bigger court, and a four-point line to space the floor better.
That would be
4-point line.
Yes, I mean, put it way out there.
Well, Steph Curry's going to win that battle.
Fine, if guys want to hoist 30-footers, make it more worthwhile, but, like, also, like, space the floor a little
right.
better. I can't watch it.
Thank you, Bob.
All right, guys. Have a
we'll
great day.
We'll be listening.
Thanks, Pom.
See you.
All right, it's 3:30 on a Thursday. That means it's time for Pony and Muller Power Rankings, and it's also time to stop blindly paying those increasing auto and home insurance premiums. Contact the Buell Insurance Agency in Gibsonia. See what they can do for you. Inspired by this stat, Pitt has won 9 in a row against Syracuse here in Pittsburgh. The last time the Panthers lost to the Orange was in 2001. That was the year Heinz Field opened. So, Malzi's task right now as a Pitt lover and Pitt enthusiast, top 5 football players of the Heinz Field, Acrisure Stadium era. So Tony Dorsett, Dan Marino, Curtis Martin, all those guys ineligible for this, Chris.
couple thoughts went through my head. Do I want to get like
Marshall Goldberg?
Do I want to get like a hipster pick in here of like somebody that was an offensive lineman that got overlooked, et cetera, et cetera? I decided no. I'm going with the obvious. One honorable mention, and I will say this, might surprise some people who thought he could have snuck on. I'm going to put Tyler Palko as an honorable mention. He authored some wins, namely the one at Notre Dame and then the legendary post-game presser that were just electrifying to watch. I love the way he played the game, played unbelievably hard, was a tough SOB out there.
He was a gamer, Mulsey.
He was hurdling people, then getting the snot knocked out of him and staying on his feet. I think that was against BC, maybe. Soft spot for Palko because I, like many others, thought that when Morelli ended up going to Penn State and Palko ended up at Pitt, and beat out Flacco, of course, that they were going to get the raw end of that deal. But Palko validated that in every way. So he's my honorable mention. Number five on this list, and again, I'm rating them on their Pitt careers, not what they became elsewhere, because in pretty much all of these cases, the guys were at least very good, if not Hall of Fame caliber pros. Number five is Darrell Revis. One of my favorite individual plays of the Akershire Stadium era, his punt return, he's throwing a fake pass. Derek Kinder's wiping out half of West Virginia on a block. Revis, who's this incredible athlete, is like running down the sidelines like kind of a stumbling drunk on a play that feels like it's happening in slow motion. He goes all the way, though, goes the distance. It's one of the greatest punt returns I've ever seen from a guy that was an absolute lockdown corner and became even better in the pros. So Darrell Revis, number five on my list.
And looking good these days, Darrell Revis. Saw him, I think, back at Pitt for his last game here, or for Pitt's last game against Cal.
He's svelte again?
Yeah, he's looking. What do you mean?
Because he had gotten he had gotten a little bit heavier at like a Hall of Fame type of thing.
Donnie,
or something.
Is that true?
He'd gotten heavier. I'm asking you.
Yeah,
if he's
Pudgy Revis.
He's trimmed back down.
Our guy put some pounds on, but I mean, who cares? He might be one of the greats in NFL history.
What, 10 greatest corners ever? He's got a shot at it.
So that makes him entitled to put on the pounds. Then?
Don't they always say the linemen gets? Don't they always say the linemen get skinnier? The skill guys like wideouts and corners get heavier after their careers
because they're not moving as much and they're still eating like crap. Okay, Revis four.
Number four.
Revis five.
Number four. Ultimately, I would say this guy is the best actual pro of the bunch because you know how I feel about him. I think he's very much got a case as the best defensive player ever to live. I'm going Aaron Donald four.
Mm.
Aaron Donald was a 4-year player at Pitt. He was exceptional, or he was very good, I would say, in his sophomore and junior years, and then he became a force of nature to an almost astounding degree his senior year. 29 tackles for loss, 11 sacks. He was a monster. He upped his numbers every single year at Pitt, except for like a lower sack total in his junior year, but the guy was just phenomenal. He was a one-man wrecking crew. He was unconventional in terms of his size for the position. It didn't matter because he was just so quick, so strong, so explosive. He's tackling quarterbacks and running backs at the inflection point, the handoff point on RPOs. He's just ragdolling dudes, and then we know what he became in the pros. But he is only fourth on this list.
Man, I think that's low. I'm very interested to hear the other three guys. Three?
Well, I have to give a guy who ran for 1,800 yards as a freshman, only played 2 years here, had the least distinguished NFL career of this whole bunch. Deion Lewis was phenomenal.
Oh, man.
His 2 years at Pitt.
Wow. That is an upset of epic proportions.
The guy ran for 1,799 yards. He was an 1,800-yard running back. And then it's not like the second year he was bad.
I mean,
I just watched Deion Lewis churn out big game after big game as a guy who was about 5'7".
All right. But it looks like, and I don't have your list in front of me, but it looks like a guy that was in New York City for the Heisman presentation is not even going to make
correct,
the top
five. Correct.
He's
not. I'll already tell you he's not. That's right, because he was a one-year wonder. And these guys all at least had two phenomenal seasons. I'm looking at Deion Lewis's his career, especially that freshman year. He was terrific, man. Number two, I think this guy and Deion, in terms of their stat production, are pretty much interchangeable. In fact, you could go look it up. The numbers are eerily similar. Lewis has a better yards per carry, but individual game performances, very few guys have a Shady McCoy in 13-9.
Yeah.
He was the whole effing show for them, as Rob Van Dam would say about himself in pro wrestling. The Big East had its own referees conspiring to try to keep Pitt from winning that game because they wanted WVU in the national championship game. Shady would not be denied. 2,800-plus yards over two seasons. For the aesthetic part of it, while Lewis would just kind of plod ahead and was this great interior runner for such a small guy, there's something extra fun about watching Shady just clown people, which he did. I mean, lateral jump cuts that would have guys grasping for air where they thought he was. He was immensely fun to watch. He was a hugely ballyhooed recruit who lived up to the billing and then some. Shady McCoy, number two. Number one should be obvious. If you've ever heard me talk about this guy, you know how I feel about his tenure at Pitt. He's on campus right now. They're going to honor him tonight. He is the subject, or he is the victim, in one of the greatest miscarriages of Heisman Trophy justice that I have ever seen.
That Ron Cook had a big
hand in. Ron Cook and Bob Smizek had a hand in it. They both bristle and get very angry when people point that out. I don't know if that's because they both have just dug their heels in maintaining their right, or if either one of them might have a guilty conscience about 18 knee brace wearing Jason White winning the Heisman as a Lifetime Achievement Award for being in his like 12th year at Oklahoma. I think he probably went to dental school or started a practice in his late 30s after his first year out there. He was practically older than Chris Wenke despite not being like a minor league baseball player. Larry Fitzgerald at Pitt in 2 years, particularly year number two, is on the very short list of the single most dominant college football players I've ever watched. Genty from Boise State kind of looks like that guy this year, and Ndamukong Suh at Nebraska Pony was on that level with the way he just took people apart even more than Donald did. Larry Fitzgerald was a man playing amongst children when he was at Pitt. The touchdown streak, the fact that everybody knew he was getting the ball and they still could do nothing about it. The only team to stop him in year two was Miami. Do you know who they had to use to cover him? Antrell Roll, who would go on to be a very good NFL corner.
Yep.
And they were rolling Sean Taylor, I believe, over the top.
Wow.
They were utilizing
two great NFL players.
Two all-time great NFL players. I think I have Taylor right. I don't think it would have been Ed Reed back then.
Nope.
They were using two guys who were Hall of Fame level type talents to slow down Larry Fitzgerald. So my list is honorable mention Palko, best player, Pitt players of the Acrisure Stadium, Heinz Field era. Honorable mention Tyler Palko. Number five, Darrell Revis. Number four, Aaron Donald. Number three, Deion Lewis. Number two, Shady McCoy. Number one, Larry Fitzgerald. And yes, that means no Kenneth Shane Pickett.
Also, I thought Connor had an argument. I mean, the guy was ACC Player of the Year.
I know. Kenny probably should have been my honorable mention, but I don't know. I feel like I'm giving it to the West A kid. Dorn will be
I'm
happy about that.
I'm shocked that you put Lewis ahead of Aaron Donald. I mean, I was trying to go by the
Pitt career, though, and Donald had the...
He was the best defensive player in the country.
I know. It's my list, though.
Yeah. Well, it becomes our list because it's PM Team Power Ranking, so now we're guilty by association.
Okay. I think real Pitt heads will appreciate the care that was put into this.